Hello, everyone, and happy Tuesday evening. It's good to be here with you from Ken and Rebecca's new house. I was here from Ken and Rebecca's new house before, but that was the day they moved in and everything was in boxes. Now it's a little more, there's still a lot of boxes, but it's more put together now, so it's feeling a little different. Was that just last week, or did we not do this last week? Was that two weeks ago? Did it from home. Okay, that's what I thought.
It was 2 weeks ago.
It seemed like a long time ago, but you never know. So we are going to start with a song, a Kirtana song. And it's one that I guess Ken and I both play a lot, but we like it. It's called Do You Hear the Music? It's about following guidance.
Thank you.
Lots of people on fire in the room, actually. We don't know what that means.
Hi, honey.
Oh, hi, Dave.
Hi.
Hey.
Had a huge traffic jam on on Highway 50 there. They're remaking.
Yes. Hi, come on in. We're just getting started.
Excuse me.
I don't know if any of you guys know Hamilton the musical. I kind of wish I knew it a little better. I've listened to it a couple of times, but there's a line that's repeated over and over in it. Hamilton says it starting in the very beginning of the song and very beginning of the musical, and he repeats it every now and then throughout the entire musical, and it's something like, I'm not going to give up my shot, or I'm not going to miss my shot. Does anybody know that? If Jasmine was here, she would know. But that line that I can't quite pull back from Hamilton the musical was coming into my mind during that song that we were just listening to, because, you know, basically she was asking you when guidance speaks. Oh, sound is low. At least somebody is saying. When guidance speaks, are you going to miss your shot, or are you gonna give up your shot? I wish I could remember that exact line, and that's basically what the song was about. Or are you gonna be grateful that you have guidance, regardless of what it is, because it's here to help you, you know, awaken, let go of the ego, and follow it. So, too bad Jasmine's not here. Where is she when you need her? She'd know that line. But welcome again to Gentle Healing, and we are at the opening part of the group where you guys get to share from your experience in the last week. In the last week, we were looking at workbook lessons 201 to 207, which are review lessons. We also read from The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, chapters 7 and 8, and then we watched a Rupert Spira video. So, of course, you can share on any of those, as well as just sharing from your own experience, you know, what you may have seen in your own mind or whatever. So, anyone who would like to share, now is the time. And I must confess, Doreen, I'm a little curious about how you're doing. Doreen lives in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Oh.
Yeah. So a little curious about that. I've been thinking of you. Oh, you wanna share with them what you, why don't we let go? I think you probably can't take the mic while we have it, so why don't we let go of the mic so that Nancy can have it? Not sure if she knows how to take the mic. Nan, do you still want to take the mic? I see I. And I'm not sure which version you're in. Unfortunately, that now we have a couple different versions of Pal Talk out there, and the mic is a little different. Yes, you're in the new version? Okay, in the new version, down at the bottom, right next to where you're typing, there's a round picture of a mic, and down in the bottom corner, there's a little picture of a lock. So I'm going to let go of the mic again, and all you have to do is click on that lock to take the mic, and then when you're done, click on it again to let go. Go back. Okay, you'll try later. Okay, good. And I see Kathy's asking, do we know why there's a flame by some of our names? No. There was a flame by my name yesterday and not today. So, I don't know what that means. But, whatever, you know. So who else would like to share based on your experience in the last week? All right, Doreen, the mic is yours.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me? Great. Thank you, Regina, for asking how I was doing. I might not have even spoken tonight if you hadn't called or if you hadn't mentioned anything. I actually have been feeling waves of different things, different emotions. But the most prominent emotion is sadness. And I've been allowing myself to feel the sadness, and to, to be with it and, to be with it. What I'm feeling right now, like I said, it's been waves, and there are moments where I have felt extremely grounded and extremely centered. And sadness that I'm feeling right now has to do with me just watching the last Trump, a clip of the last Trump press conference. And one of the things that I have been experiencing for many, many years, many years since I've been on this journey, and with all the racial tensions that have been a part of this country for quite some time, and knowing how to be with that as a spiritual student, and the spiritual student that I choose to be, which is seeing everyone as light and seeing the loving presence of everyone, no matter what they do and how they behave and what they exhibit, and even to know the truth of who they are. For me, these experiences that have happened in Charlottesville, it actually feels like it definitely is a part of my spiritual curriculum to really dive deep into understanding who I am and how I want to be. There was a part of me, as I've been on this journey, and particularly with Awakening Together and some of the teachings that we've had, that I'd say that, you know, we don't to not engage and protest and because it just tends to cause the friction back and forth, and you definitely see that. But honestly, if I'm very truthful with myself, I tried that, and I could still feel this stirring inside of me that there was something different and or something else that was meant for me. And as I been in contemplation with it, what comes for me as the very most important thing is to come to my center, to discern my inner voice, listen for the guidance, and do that. And sometimes that guidance is stay home. And sometimes that guidance is do something creative. And sometimes that guidance is go to the spaces where the rallies are to take place and meditate and be present there. And sometimes that guidance is to be right in the midst of it. And sometimes that guidance is to be there for others. And so as I navigated this weekend, I did a little bit of all of what I just said. On Friday, I found myself at the park where the rally was expected to be the next day, and meditated and contemplated and just sat on a bench for about 3 hours there, feeling the calm, feeling the calm that was there, feeling the presence that was there. There wasn't a lot of people in the park at that time. You know, reporters were starting to show up, and I'm sure there was some members of the alt-right that were coming just to assess the area. You can kind of sense who people are by their demeanor somehow. And I just sat there and I felt good about it. And I came home that night and realized that a lot of the alt-right had descended on the university campus, a surprise rally with torches, tiki torches, and a lot of fighting. And, you know, so my intention for this weekend, I actually had to ask Spirit, where should I be right now? And, my spiritual aspiration is to be the presence. And I felt like I was that this weekend for myself and for other people. Even though I was there, on Saturday, right in the midst of the protests and the back and forth of chants and bottles and spray and tear gas and I felt just in the middle and very much in an observant role. I felt the presence of Holy Spirit with me. I felt the presence of Holy Spirit guiding me through other people. When I was potentially in harm's way, I was quickly directed somewhere else somehow. And knew exactly when I was supposed to leave. And I did that. And discovered when I got home, the place where my car was parked actually happened to have been a place where there was another pocket of fighting that was happening. Bringing it back to the teachings and this week's teachings and the meditation and the things and how it supported me through this time. It supported me, but it also caused me to dive really deep as to how dive deep in where Spirit would have me at any given time, no matter what anyone outside of me says. There are a lot of people who of a similar spiritual consciousness as myself that live in this community. And some of them are struggling as to how to be. And there's a lot of people here also who feel that we have to be, everyone has to be in the streets and everybody has to stand up and protest and do what they do. These are serious times. It really is. I don't believe, I think I keep coming back to what does your guidance say, and to follow your own guidance and to do that and to come from your heart. And that has been my message to people, as we talk and as we share and as I witness the challenges that are the emotions and the things that they're going through, is to just remember what you're feeling and do that. Do what's in your heart. I'm not sure what else to say. I haven't been extremely emotional until now, actually, because I felt very grounded for the majority of the weekend and with these bouts of sadness. But it is challenging. It is challenging. My guidance is saying, if I could articulate it, it's not that we, have to go to our hearts and do what is in our hearts and kind of drop away the ideologies and what people say and what people expect of you. I did find myself being very curious about certain things, and I found myself being attached to Facebook and monitoring what's been going on. But when I start to feel that energy, I try to come back and say, where would you have me be and how would you have me be in this moment? I think that's all I can say right now. Maybe more might come later, but thank you for asking, Regina, and thank you for thinking of me. I do ask that you, and everybody just, do what you feel in your own hearts, whatever that might be, in relation to this experience and what we're going through in this country. That's all I have. Letting go.
Thank you very much, Doreen, for sharing. And checking with them for guidance all of the time is a beautiful practice. One thing that I have found in my life is that often difficult times push us into the situation where we are more willing to do that. And I think this isn't just directed to you. This is directed to all of us. What would be good is if we would embrace that habit during the easier times too, right? It seems like when it's difficult, we go within, we ask for guidance, but when things are going easier, we forget all about it. That tends to be human nature. So learning to be as consistent all of the time. Also, it's wonderful whenever there's a storm going on, whether the storm is in the world or whether the storm is happening just in our own mind. It is wonderful to stand as the eye of the storm, right? The peace within the storm. There's always peace within the storm. So to do our best to be the peace within the storm is very, very important. Peace is always helpful. A storm added to storm just creates more storm, right? Who else would like to share? Let's see. You want to try again? Okay, Nancy, the mic is for Nan right now, and then after that we'll go to Tony. But first, Nancy, we'll try you. Okay. All right. If you want to try typing what you want to share, that would be good because it seems like you're having a little bit of a challenge taking the mic. And Tony, I'm going to turn the mic over to you. Too much to type.
Hi, everyone. My husband was doing something with the cable, and I started when this started at 8 o'clock, but then it went out, and I missed everything that Doreen said except at the very end. So I'm sorry, but I'll have to go back and listen to the replay. What I wanted to comment on is the Rupert Spira video. I've heard Rupert Spira several times in the past, and I really like the way that he speaks, but I do have a hard time, especially in this video. It was very, very slow, and his words were just, he's got a soft voice, and he seemed to be pretty repetitive with the same things that he was saying, and I found myself kind of drifting off to sleep. And it wasn't until almost the very end of the video that something really captured my attention, and I picked up my book and I wrote it down, and I just want to read that. There isn't a separate being for each of us. Being aware of awareness is the same experience in all of us. We are literally the same being. That's what love is. When you feel you love someone deeply, don't we feel we are one with that person? Don't we feel that everything that separates us from that person dissolves? Love is the recognition of our shared being. And that just struck me as being so right. I have experienced that feeling of deep love for my granddaughter, and so I understand that what he's saying. When I look at her and when I'm interacting with her, I feel like that there is just one. And so it helps me to, now that I know exactly what that experience is like, to be able to look at others in the same way, looking, you know, past the physical form of each one of us to the awareness that we all are, and connecting with that, and connecting with that same love that we all are. And I was just really, really moved by the end of that video. And so I want to thank you for allowing us to look at that and to share. Thank you. I'm dropping the mic.
Yeah, thank you very much for sharing. And yeah, this wasn't a riveting video. It was more an opportunity, I think, to kind of be guided into looking at one's awareness again. You know, just another, probably one of the most boring teachings out there. And I feel like, I think I commented recently that I think I'm getting more boring. One of the most boring teachings out there is just coaching people to pay attention to awareness. You know, it doesn't have any of the metaphysical concepts in it. So, and that's really all he was doing in this video. And he was very soft-spoken. I was listening to him in the car while Ron was driving, and with the motor of the truck and all that, I had to not only put headsets on, but I had to cut my hands over my ears and create some artificial, what do they call, headsets, so that I could really hear him. It took a little bit of work to concentrate on him in the car, but I did that. It was a good time for me to listen. Is there anyone else who wants to share? And no one here in the room? This will be the first time that no one in the room has shared. We should write this down on the calendar.
All right.
Okay, I twisted Ken's arm.
There was a change.
We may have to, yeah.
In viewing the world, of seeing everybody as my brother, seeing everybody as love. And
yesterday we were out shopping and I was in Home Depot to buy a toolbox, and I looked around behind me because I heard some noise, and here was a man in a motorized, on the motorized carts that Home Depot has, trying to push one of their big carts with two toilets and a bag of cement on it. Not doing well. So I asked him if he needed help, and he goes, "Sure, do you work here?" And I go, "No." And he kind of just looks at me like, "Then why are you offering to help?" So I just pushed it up to the checkout counter, and he said he had more shopping to do, and it's fine. Went back, bought my toolbox, and then went to Walmart, and there was a lady in front of me, and she had a Denver Broncos ice bag, or cooler bag. And normally I don't talk to people in line. I just kind of let them do their thing, and I do mine. Something came over me, and I happened to have my Walmart app open so I could use the Walmart Pay, and so I just typed in Broncos cooler bag, up pops the item, and they didn't have a price on it, so the cashier had guessed at $10, and the lady was fine with that. And so I pull it up on my app, and it's $5. So I just handed her the phone and said, "Here it is, $5. So she retyped it as $5, and they both looked at me like, "Huh?" I go, "It's pay it forward. It's..." Now, whatever term you want to put on helping your fellow man, your fellow neighbor, your whatever, it just, it felt like the thing to do. And I've been helpful, like with the young man who's, I used my AAA to tow. That just seemed to be, okay, I want this car out of the road. How are we going to get it out of the road? This kid doesn't have the money, so let's play it. These are just seem to be a lot less stickiness to it. And it was just very different. And I know it's all part of the repeated lessons every day about your brother. You are one. We are all one. I think even you had something in one of your lessons, I don't know what was the reading from last week about, or out of Michael Singer, was about...
Your wife says you're getting louder. You're getting quiet. You know.
Oh, yes. Okay. Coaching here. And it was just a different feeling. And that's what I wanted to share. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ken. All right, is there anyone else who wants to share before I begin my thing? All right, then I will begin. So as far as the homework goes, in a way, again, it wasn't a riveting week because everything you were doing this week, in a way, was stuff that you, quote, already know. You were doing review course lessons, so you'd already been through those lessons before. You were reading about awareness, watching awareness from The Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, which has at least been read to you before and possibly read by you. And you were listening to Rupert Spira, who was also teaching awareness, watching awareness. What a boring week, huh? And now guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to read it all to you again. Yeah, and what I'm going to do, I actually have the green cover of the Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, which is the most recent cover. And the reason I got it was because I wanted to see if he expressed anything any differently. But I don't think he did in these particular chapters. I think it's the same as the, at least the black cover. It may be slightly different than what's online, because what's online is the oldest of all. And I'm not going to read the whole thing to you. I am just going to read some things that I highlighted as things that I just wanted to touch on again and go over again. So the first thing I want to talk about is Michael Langford's definition of thought. And he does point out that this is the definition of thought for the purpose of this practice. In other words, you may find other definitions of thought out there, and that's okay too. But for the purpose of awareness, watching awareness, this is the definition of thought. Thoughts are the words of your native language in your mind. If your native language is English, thoughts are those English words in your mind. If you are fluent in two languages, then thoughts are the words of those two languages in your mind. And just out of curiosity, Francine, when you're trying to meditate, do you hear both French and English?
Mostly English.
Mostly English, yeah. Okay. Yes. Even though French is your native language, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Just curious how that worked with these people. I only know one language, so that's all I can hear. But what I wanted to comment on is, it's not that I disagree with this statement, because I do agree that thoughts are those words that come into your mind. And really what I think he wants you to see is the difference between thought and awareness, which I will get deeper into. But I want to include something else in thought, something that some of you may experience more than others, and that's the images in your mind. And I see some head shaking right here in the room. One of the things that doesn't seem to happen to me too much anymore, but used to happen when I was in awareness, watching awareness, is the ego would bring images into my mind of places that I love and haven't been there in like 20 years or 30 years or maybe even 40 years. And the detail was incredible. Like my average conscious memories, I don't have the best memory. Anybody who knows me knows that. So if I do remember something, it's kind of fuzzy. But the detail in meditation was just incredible. I could see it as well as I can see with my eyes now. And I could like go around a corner and see what was in there. And I could just feel in my heart, it was like, oh, it's so nice to be here again. And then I started noticing that was distracting me from awareness, watching awareness, right? Going in and enjoying these places that I used to be. And so then I started to, after a couple of days, I started resisting the temptation to explore these places in my mind. And then after a time, that quit coming up. But I just wanted to point out, that it's not just the words in your mind. It can also be images. I would really include that as thought. Yes.
Feelings as well?
Well, we're going to talk about feelings separately. So yes, we're going to talk about feelings separately. But yeah, I want to include both of those things as thoughts, images and the words. Another thing that I want to bring up, of course, and we bring this up over and over again, and Rupert Spira brought it up, but I'll just do it again. Awareness does not come and go. In fact, last night I was listening to Joanne's teaching. And right near the end of her teaching, in the last 15 minutes of her teaching, she started looking at awareness as she was teaching. And she really commented that awareness doesn't age. I don't remember what age she was looking at first. I don't know if she was remembering looking through her eyes at 5 or looking through her eyes at 15. I don't remember that level of detail. But as she was looking back in her memory at awareness, she realized awareness doesn't age. That I felt the same then as it does now. It doesn't age. And that's the whole thing about awareness. It's constant and it's changeless. And so whenever we're in awareness, watching awareness meditation, if we're paying attention to something that comes and goes, it could be feelings, it could be images, it could be thoughts, that's not it. That's not awareness. And one of the things that confused me in the beginning, and I think it might also confuse others, is, when you get into awareness, watching awareness meditation, sometimes you can have some really pleasant feelings. Like the heart opening up, maybe some tingling happening somewhere in the head or the hands or the feet. And sometimes we can really, think, oh, this is it. That's not it either, right? Those great feelings are not it, because those great feelings come and go, right? Awareness is that which is aware of those great feelings, just like awareness is that which is aware of any feelings that aren't so great, right? So we want to keep that in mind. Awareness is not anything that begins or ends. It's not anything that comes or goes. And keep looking for that which is constant, that which is always here. Now, this is a very interesting sentence. Sometimes I wonder if everybody sees this sentence. Maybe they do. But he says, the words awareness, consciousness, attention, observing, watching, looking, seeing, and concentrating all have the same meaning in the practice instructions. And the reason that to me is a very important sentence is because many of us would say, well, being aware and concentrating is not the same thing. Or attention and looking is not the same thing. And actually it's the mind that makes those differences. He is saying these words all mean the same thing. Awareness, consciousness, attention, observing, watching, looking, seeing, and concentrating. So that means that, you know, we're calling it awareness, watching awareness. We could call it attention, attending to attention. We could call it consciousness, being conscious of consciousness. We could call it looking, looking at looking. Of course, most people think, what? But really, looking, looking at looking, right? And the reason that's important, again, is not everybody gets the feel of what awareness, watching awareness is right away. And if you read all of Michael Langford's first book, The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, you'll find out that he was reading pointers to this type of meditation from teachers like Ramana Maharshi, Nisargadatta Maharaj, for years before it finally clicked with him what they were talking about. And when it clicked for him, the way it clicked was, oh, it's awareness watching awareness. That's what clicked for him, right? And so that's what he uses, right? And because, you know, we're reading his book, we use that term too. But maybe that exact flavor of the same thing doesn't click for you. And in fact, even though I talk about awareness, watching awareness meditation, I would say that if I had never heard of Michael Langford and just discovered this within myself and was teaching it in my own words, I would probably call it being aware of awareness. Those are the words I would use. Being aware of awareness. That's what clicks with me. So we're all looking for the same thing, but the way that we understand it with our mind and therefore the way it clicks for us may use a slightly different set of words. And in fact, one thing that was really interesting, if you're only listening to the words and you're only going about this in an intellectual way, then it appears that Rupert Spira said that Michael Langford is a liar. Although, of course, he's probably never even heard of Michael Langford. But, you know, Michael Langford talks about awareness watching awareness. He says, turn around and look at awareness, right? And Rupert Spira said, you can't do that. You can't do that, right? This is just two different people expressing something that's really kind of beyond expression. It's something that you feel within, and they're expressing it in different ways. And in fact, somewhere in here, it's probably in chapter 8, Michael Langford said, and I'm sure I'll get to it, Michael Langford describes awareness as empty. And he says, oh yeah, here it is. Awareness is empty. There is no thing to observe in awareness. Right? So that's really what Rupert Spira was talking about. I don't know if it was when I first started, somewhere along the way, probably 6 months into practicing awareness, watching awareness, I thought I got it. I thought I found awareness and I could watch it. And I watched it for about 6 months before I realized, wait a minute, what's aware of that? What I was watching was probably what a lot of people mistake for awareness. It was sensations in the head. You know, and I don't know where those sensations come from, whether it's just brain activity maybe, but there are sensations in the head that the ego will identify with, and that I perceived as awareness. But it finally just clicked one day. It just dawned on me in meditation that something was aware of those sensations. Therefore, those sensations could not be it. And that's really the point that Rupert Spira is trying to make, and also the point that Michael Langford is making here. Even though it's called awareness watching awareness, if it's an object like a sensation, that's not awareness, right? You can watch, in a way, sensations in your head. In the way that you watch sensations in your head, you can't watch awareness, because awareness is not an object. So when he says awareness watching awareness, he's not referring to that type of watching, which is probably why I like to say awareness being aware of awareness works better for me. One of the ways that I also started being aware of awareness, and I introduced this to you all earlier, was with the open-eyed method of becoming aware of awareness. And this is something that you watched an Ellie Ruzdar video several weeks ago about the open-eyed method. And the open-eyed method is how I would start meditation, you know, maybe for the first year and a half, the first 2 years, quite a while before I started going right to closed eyes. And what I would do with my eyes open, what I started with was more simplistic, although it's not completely simple for everyone. What I started with was being aware of seeing. Like right now I'm looking at Ken's glasses on his, on the side, I'm looking right here at the side of his head where I can see the, this part of the glass that goes back to the ear. What's that called? The frame? Looking at the frame of his glasses. All right? I can see the frame of his glasses. That's an object. I cannot see my seeing, right? But I can be aware of my seeing, right? I am aware that I see Ken's glasses. So I would start by being aware of my seeing. And because that's an objectless type of watching, or an objectless type of being aware, right? Then I would move from being aware of my seeing to being aware that I was aware of my seeing, right? I would kind of back it up and be aware, I'm aware of my seeing. That got me in touch with awareness. Then I would close my eyes, notice that I was still aware of awareness, and then I was able to pay attention to awareness. So again, it's an objectless scene. You're not seeing an object. And that's what Rupert Spira was referring to when he was saying you can't watch it, you can't see it. Because on the one hand, that's true, right? But on the other hand, you're paying attention to that instead of your thoughts, or instead of the outside world, or instead of your feelings. So that paying attention to awareness is what Michael Langford is calling watching. In fact, he said that everybody knows how to watch people. You know, like you can sit in a mall and people watch, right? He says it's just taking that same skill and watching awareness with it. So it's the attention he's teaching you to shift. Because really when you're watching people, your attention is going to the people, right? So it's taking your attention and shifting it to awareness. And that's what he's calling watching. But it doesn't mean that you're looking at an object. There is no object to look at. And again, if you might try, if you aren't sure what awareness watching awareness is yet, you might try doing what I did. Be aware of seeing first. Because again, seeing is not an object. You can't see seeing. But you can be aware that you see. And in fact, you can even close your eyes and then be aware that you don't see. Right? And that's the kind of watching we're talking about. He says, awareness is that which is conscious of thought, or conscious of the absence of thought, Both when there are thoughts and when there are no thoughts, the background of awareness is aware. So again, the way to play with that, again, I think it, the easiest way, at least for me, was to play with it with seeing, right? I'm aware that I see. I close my eyes. I'm aware now that I do not see, but the awareness is unchanged, right? I started with awareness of seeing, because that, you could say I had more control over that, because I could open and close the eyes. That helped me to learn. But then, again, thoughts come. Sure, you're aware of the thoughts. But if you get to the point where there are no thoughts, the awareness is the same. There's an awareness of no thought, right? The funny thing is, if you focus on that too much, pretty soon you're going to be thinking about how there's no thoughts. So you kind of have to, you know, you have to be careful with that one. But the point is that awareness is there whether thinking is happening or not. Are you falling asleep?
No.
I knew this was a boring teaching.
No, I'm not.
She looks like she's falling asleep.
Where is conscious awareness?
All right. So awareness is that which is conscious of thought or conscious of the absence of thought. Both when there are thoughts and when there are no thoughts, the background of awareness is aware. Now, here we go into emotions. Awareness is not emotions. Both when there are emotions and when there are no emotions, the background of awareness is aware. So it doesn't matter if your heart is wide open and it just feels great, or if you're in maximum fear. What's aware of the open heart? What's aware of the fear? Or maybe for some reason you're just in this neutral place where you don't feel anything. What's aware of not feeling anything? The awareness that's there when you have an open heart, and the awareness that's there when you're in maximum fear, is the same awareness. Now she's laughing at me. She's no longer falling asleep. She's laughing at me. She's texting. Okay. She's laughing at her texts. All right. So awareness is not emotions. Both when there are emotions and when there are no emotions, the background of awareness is aware. Also really important, awareness is not the thought I. I remember when I first started, again, awareness, watching awareness meditation, I would sit there and think, I am being still. Because I'm laughing, somebody else might be saying, oh, I did that this morning. I don't know. But I am being still. That I is not awareness, and that I is not the true self. That I is just thought. So one thing that I like to do, and in fact I do it every day when I sit down to awareness, watching awareness meditation, is, again, when I first close my eyes, my mind's pretty active. It just is. It seems like there's always something to think about. You know, I have a busy life, and anybody with a busy life has lots of stuff to think about. So, you know, you sit down, you do nothing, you close your eyes, your mind says, oh, here's a chance to think about it, right? So my thinking starts as soon as I close my eyes. And what I do is I look right at the thinking, and I ask, who sees this? Or sometimes I ask, to whom do these thoughts appear? And when I ask who sees this, that takes my attention from the thought and puts my attention on, I'm going to call it the seeing again, but it's the inner seeing with the eyes closed, right? It's really the attention. It takes the attention off of the thought and puts the attention on the seeing. And then once my attention is on the seeing, I ask, who am I? And somehow, I don't know how, my attention actually goes back further before the seeing into awareness. So the I in that sentence, who am I, is not the I am still I, or the I am thinking too much I, or the I don't feel good today I, right? It's way before that. So let's say I don't feel good. Today I haven't felt good all day. Danielle knows that, but I think I've hit it well from everybody else, but I don't feel well today at all, and I haven't all day long. I told Danielle, I don't usually say this very often, but I can't wait till today is over. I can't wait to go to bed. So I don't feel well today. I have a headache, and I've had an upset stomach on and off throughout the day, and I feel tired and, you know, just generally not good. So if I close my eyes right now, the first thing I might notice is this headache. As soon as I close the eyes, the pounding gets bigger, right? And so the thought might be, oh, I don't feel good, or oh, I'm tired. So the way I respond to that is, to whom does this arise? Not only to whom does this thought arise, but to whom does this headache arise? To whom does this tiredness arise? To whom does this upset stomach arise, right? To whom does this arise? And as soon as I say that, I shift back into the seeing, that which sees the thought that I don't feel well. It sees the headache, it sees the tiredness, it sees the upset stomach, right? It sees all of that. And then once I'm in the scene, I ask, who, or I might say, what am I? And the attention shifts back to that which is aware of the seeing. Because something actually sees the seeing. And so I personally find that method of getting in touch with awareness to be extremely, extremely helpful. Again, I don't know for sure if that will work for you. You may need to find your own way, but it shifts me almost two levels back from the I don't feel well, two levels back from that particular I. So again, the I don't feel well, I feel great, I am still, you know, I am thinking too much, I am sleepy, I am energetic. That is definitely not awareness. It also says awareness is not desire. And I got to tell you, the first time I read that, that kind of broke my heart. because one thing that has always been helpful to me on this path is what I call my willingness, right? And I suppose somehow I had identified with my willingness as if my willingness was everything that I am. But willingness is a type of desire. It's a desire for freedom, a desire for truth. And so the very first time I read that awareness is not desire, I actually had to let go of that attachment I had to my willingness because I was a little sad. But then I just started looking at it objectively. And yeah, there's always been something here that is me, that is what I am, that has been aware of my willingness, right? The willingness is an object, sort of. I, what I am, is aware of the willingness. Also, some people say, you know, I don't have any willingness, you know. But what's aware of that? What's aware of the apparent lack of willingness? What's aware of the resistance? And that's what's really amazing about awareness. I mean, it's really crazy. Because we really are all seeking what's here all the time.
Presence.
All the time. It doesn't matter how we're feeling. It doesn't matter if we're having a good day or a bad day. It doesn't matter if we think we're in touch with spirit or don't think we're in touch with spirit or feel willingness or don't have willingness or have a lot of resistance right now. It's always, 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 always here. The problem is we don't shift our attention to awareness. We stay focused on the objects, whether it's completely outside, like paying attention to what's happening in the world or in our personal lives, or whether it's paying attention to our emotions or paying attention to our thoughts or paying attention to how our body feels. We spend almost, and this we is the general human, not necessarily the individuals in this room. We spend almost no time, if not no time, paying attention to awareness. So how do you speak to the I, the first word I to be seen and the second I to be thoughts? I don't know what Ramana Maharshi would say. My guess is he would say the first I is thought and the second I is awareness, going the other way. So the first I probably is the one that you identify with, right? The person. And the second I is that which sees the person. That would be my guess. So hopefully that answered the question. Yeah, I. But the second I takes you back before the person, back into awareness. And I do sometimes say I while meditating. You know, when I first begin, I may say things like, to whom does this arise and what am I? It's really helpful in the beginning. But after a little bit of meditating, that's too many words. And so if I just need to reshift myself again, if I feel attention going out, I may just say, to whom? Or I may just say, I. And just to redirect the attention back to awareness again. But that's usually after I've already been, you know, there pretty strongly and it's just trying to drift out again. I love this one. Awareness is not something far away or mysterious. Awareness is that which is looking through your eyes reading this sentence. I have said this and I have heard other people say this and I know we believed it at the time, but it's like, I lost awareness. You can't lose awareness. It's impossible. What's aware of the feeling or the idea that you lost awareness? How do you know that? Right? You're aware. You can't lose awareness. So when we think we've lost awareness, it's because we were looking at an object. Maybe we lost the willingness, or maybe we lost that which felt good, you know, those good feelings, you know, or something like that. But you can't lose awareness. You'd be definitely dead.
Right.
Right? Dead. Right? So are you paying attention to thoughts or awareness? Awareness is the answer. I do not pay attention to thoughts. The idea is to shift attention from thought to awareness. And even from images to awareness. Again, recently in one of the tips, you guys read the story that Muji tells about the yogini. And remember, the yogini was having divine images. Right? She had gods visiting her in her meditation and all of that. And remember, she was asking questions like, to whom does this arise? Shifting her attention away from divine images back to awareness. And in that way, she awoke to herself. And if you think about it, you know, this even makes sense. Awareness is the only thing that's always here. You know what Ramana used to say, what Ramana Maharshi used to say to people who, like Papaji. Papaji was bragging back when he was still a student. He was bragging to Ramana Maharshi about how ever since he was a little kid, Krishna would appear and he could play with Krishna. You know, so sometimes Krishna was there, sometimes Krishna wasn't there, but you know, he was kind of bragging that he had this special power for, you know, it's like, I mean, think about it. If you had Jesus appearing ever since you were a kid, right? You know, right? It's kind of a special thing. And you know what Ramana said to that? What good is a God that comes and goes? That's what he said to that. What good is a God that comes and goes? Jesus referred to awareness as, does anybody know the answer to this? Other than I am? He had another word for it. Does anybody know? I'll just wait a minute in case somebody's typing away. Jesus referred to awareness as blank. Eternal life is the answer I was looking for. Eternal life. Think about that for a moment. Isn't eternal life something that's always, 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 always present? If it wasn't always, always, always present, the word eternal would not fit.
Presence is also equal to awareness.
Presence is equal to awareness. Yes, presence is equal to awareness. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, it's not something far away or mysterious. It's right here, right now, all the time, always has been, always will be. Right? That's an important fact about awareness. Let's see what else I want to share here. We're doing good on time. Probably because you guys didn't talk so much tonight. Okay, I already read this sentence to you, but I'll read it again. Awareness is empty. There is no thing to observe in awareness. And then he says, just continue for the entire practice session watching your awareness. One thing that happens for me when I'm practicing awareness, watching awareness, you know, after, you know, several minutes, you know, maybe, I don't know how long, because, you know, when your eyes are closed, you're practicing awareness, watching awareness, you don't know how long. I'm going to guesstimate half an hour into it, okay, but that is a guess. What begins to happen, because I'm continually just trying to be more and more aware of awareness and less aware of objects, right? That's really the goal. What begins to happen is I begin to sense myself as the emptiness in which the body exists. I can feel the body that I previously would have called as me, right, is in me, right? That emptiness that the body is in, that's awareness. And again, you can't watch it just like, I mean, you can't watch it like you can watch the body. But you can be aware of it like you can be aware of seeing, right? Objectless. You're watching an objectlessness. You're attending to. You're putting your attention with. And again, I like to call it being aware of awareness, right? Being aware of awareness. He says the best practice session is when there are no thoughts. I'll just confess to y'all, I've never had that practice session. Maybe someday, right? Maybe some of you have, but I haven't. The best practice session is when there are no thoughts. If there are thoughts, turn your attention away from the thoughts and towards awareness, watching awareness. Now, these are great tips, what's about to come up next. Do not encourage thoughts. Do not try to complete a thought. Do not turn your attention towards thoughts. Do not think about thinking. Right? So I'm going to stop there. I love especially, I think the tip out of all of those has been most helpful to me is do not try to complete a thought. I've always loved that one. It's so easy if you want to do it, at least it's easy for me, to notice when you're right in the middle of a thought, oh, today I have to do this and this, and then oh, just stop right there, right in the middle of the sentence. Yeah.
Or a desire. If something comes into your mind that, oh, that would be fun.
Yes.
A desire, and it pulls you, wants to pull you into it.
Yes, you don't have to complete it. You can just stop right in the middle. I think learning to stop right in the middle is a great practice. You know, that's great. I don't know where, you know, I mean, at least I had it in me, this idea that I had to complete the thought, and then maybe I would try watching awareness again. You don't have to complete it. You can stop right in the middle and return back to awareness. So do not try to complete a thought. Do not turn your attention towards thoughts. Do not think about thinking. But then also listen to this. If thoughts are happening, do not make a problem out of it. Just turn your attention away from thoughts and towards awareness, watching awareness. Now again, this is hard to kind of talk about, but anybody who's had this experience knows what I'm attempting to say. I can feel the difference between my attention going to thoughts and thoughts being there, but my attention is not going to it. For example, right now in this room, we have a ceiling fan. And if I give any attention to it, I can actually tell that the entire time I've been here, something in my awareness has been aware of that buzzing of the ceiling fan. Yet I haven't given it any attention until just now. So something can be in your awareness without you giving it attention. So you can be aware that there are thoughts there, but your attention is with awareness. And as long as your attention is with awareness, don't even worry about those thoughts. Just like we don't have to worry about the buzzing of the ceiling fan, right? But as soon as you notice your attention has gone to thoughts, that's when you want to take some kind of interaction. And in my case, I might say, to whom, right? By this point, to whom does this appear? But I might have it shortened to whom, to bring my attention back to the scene. And then I, to bring my attention back to that which is aware of the scene, right? So whenever your attention goes to thought, you want to take whatever action feels helpful to return your attention to awareness. But if the thoughts are there and you're not paying attention to it, don't worry about it. Yes, Dave?
Would that apply to rest, accept, and trust? For my ego says that I'm not dealing with the thoughts that I'm having. I'm ignoring the ego. So it gets more and more frantic. It's turning up the volume of the fear.
Yeah. All right. Okay. I'm going to repeat what you're saying because I don't think they can hear you. So he's asking if this would also apply to rest, accept, and trust, because when he is resting, his ego starts saying that he's not paying attention to the thoughts. He's ignoring the thoughts, and it turns up the fear. Yeah, the ego wants you to pay attention to the thoughts because that's what keeps the ego apparently alive. So it's going to do whatever it can to get you to give your attention back. Your attention wants to remain with the resting. All right? Focus on being the I in the storm. Focus on whatever instead of focusing on the thoughts. Okay? In that way it's the same. All right, so when awareness is watching awareness, I love this part. This is important. When awareness is watching awareness, something extraordinary is happening. You are for the first time turning inward. Your true nature is awareness. What's important here is this statement that something extraordinary is happening. And again, he even says in the book, the reason he tells you that is because your mind is probably saying this is boring. You know, so what? I'm not doing anything. I'm just sitting here watching my everyday awareness. Well, just pay attention to that for a moment. When the mind is saying this is boring, so what? I'm just sitting here watching my everyday awareness. There's nothing divine here. What's the mind trying to get you to do?
Disengage.
Stop! Why would the mind want you to stop? Because this is the way to its death.
Getting too close?
You're getting too close.
That's right.
Exactly. So it doesn't matter if the mind's bored. So what? Let the mind be bored if the mind wants to be bored. This is, you're doing something extraordinary. Right? And again, we've listened to teacher after teacher after teacher tell us how important it is to pay attention to awareness. This is not one man's opinion, right? By turning your attention away from thought and towards awareness watching awareness, you are doing something that will change your life completely if you are sincere and continue to practice. And that if statement is really important. It's great to practice awareness watching awareness for a month. It's great to practice awareness watching awareness for a year. But if you quit, well then, you know, then that's that. Right?
It's like taking the braces off your teeth early.
It's like taking the braces off your teeth early, Rebecca says. Yeah, you have to continue. You have to be sincere and you have to continue practicing awareness, watching awareness until the ego's death, right? It's something you just have to do day after day after day, right? You keep it up. He says it might take a few days, a few weeks, or for some people, a few months to start to feel something. At first, it is subtle and you won't know what it is. You will know that you like it. It is pleasant. A new subtle feeling. You are beginning to feel eternal life, love, peace. And I don't know if you guys remember, but Tess Hughes said the same thing in her interview that we listened to earlier in this class. She talked about how at first she just started to feel this peace, I think is the word she used. And she didn't realize what it was yet. So that's an important point. When you start getting to the point where you actually enjoy meditation, you enjoy that feeling of peace, you're actually, your true self is beginning to show itself to you, is what's happening, right? So that's really important to realize that your true self is beginning to show itself to you. Now your true self is maybe a million times that first level of peace, right? But you're starting to feel it. So that's really important to realize that that's the case. And it is true that at some point you start enjoying meditation. Now, it is possible that you may not enjoy the thought of meditation. That's different, right? Like, you know, the mind may, because you're not in meditation yet, and the mind may say you don't have time for this, you know, oh my gosh, there's more important things to do, there's more interesting things to do. But if you overcome the mind wanting you to not meditate, and you go sit down and meditate, within about 10 minutes, you know, you may find that you're very, very happy that you're there, and you could stay for longer and longer and longer periods of time. So you may never look, the mind may never like meditation, but once you get into it, you will, right? When you start feeling that piece of the true self revealing itself. Some days the mind may be noisy. However, if you keep on practicing, a good day will appear when your practice will go very deep without your trying to make it go deep. Just be content to remain with awareness watching awareness, regardless if it seems like a good practice session or not. Some days your emotions may be turbulent. Ignore the turbulent feelings and turn your attention away from the emotions and towards awareness, watching awareness. And by ignore here, he doesn't mean repress. He means more like asking, to whom do these emotions appear? Right? To whom, who sees this sadness? Who is aware of this fear? Right? He just means shift the attention from the emotions to the awareness. That's what he means by ignore. The point is, if you find it difficult to remain with awareness, watching awareness in the beginning, don't give up. Practice every day on the good days and on the noisy mind or turbulent feeling days also. And I always say, and I mean it sincerely, that nobody can have a worse start at meditation than I did. I mean, really, I was just the worst. I hated meditating. And I would only do it maybe 5 times a year. And when I did, I would close my eyes and within 10 minutes be asleep. Now, are you worse than that? That is really, really, Dave thinks he's maybe a little better or a little worse?
A little worse.
A little worse, yeah. You know, so if that was the starting point for me. So, and now meditating is a really natural thing. I don't usually do it more than an hour to an hour and a half. Rarely 2 hours. And that's just because of the way my day goes. You know, by the time I get up and write the tip and, you know, I mean, it's just the way time is. But I meditate and I don't fall asleep. And I'm able to concentrate on focusing on awareness for the entire time I'm there. And I really say that if I can do it, anybody can. Anybody.
Are you looking at
me? I'm guessing you're not doing it yet. Are you?
No.
No, yeah, that's why I'm looking at you then. You can do it. You can do it. Admittedly, Danielle may have more of a challenge on her work day because she has to be at work like 4:45 in the morning. But on your off days, you can do it. Yeah. So... Oh, I love this too. I really love this. This sentence is a sentence that really helped me become consistent in meditation. Do not be concerned about whether you are progressing or not. That was important. Because as long as I perceive myself as failing, I didn't do it. As long as I perceive myself as not any good at it, I would do it a day or two and then not do it for a month or two. As soon as I became not concerned about whether I was progressing or not concerned about whether I was good at meditating or not, that's when I started getting consistent. Isn't that funny? So do not be concerned about whether you are progressing or not. Progress may be imperceptible to the practitioner. Persevere and continue to practice. By having your attention turned towards the world, body and thought all the time, you imagine you are a body subject to disease, death, and suffering. That tells you the cause of the belief, I am a body. The cause of the belief, I am a body, is always having our attention outward on the world and thoughts. By turning your attention towards awareness, you are for the first time observing what you are. Let's see. You'll discover you're not a body living in a world. You are eternal awareness, perfect love, joy. So the way to find out that you are not a body, although we're saying right now, I am not a body, I am free, I am still as God created me, and that's a beautiful thing to say. The real way to find out that that's true is to continually focus your attention on what you are until it just becomes completely, completely obvious that that's what you are and you are not a body. So I'm going to stop with that. I'm going to put this book aside and I'm going to pick up another book. But we are going to continue, obviously, with awareness watching, awareness meditation. But also in the homework this week, you are going to be reading about another type of meditation. Let's see, what's it called? The abandon release method. So if anybody really just feels like, you know, I've been trying this awareness watching awareness meditation for 6 months now and I just don't get it, you can try the abandon release method. Of course, as you guys have already been introduced to the loving consciousness method as well, and several of you have told me you like it, that's another method. So even though I'm going to continue to use the terms awareness watching awareness, and the homework is going to continue to refer to awareness watching awareness, in reality, you have three options. You can practice awareness watching awareness, loving consciousness, or this new abandon release method that you're going to read about this week. Whichever meditation feels more like it's working for you, that's okay. But the point is we want to continue to meditate for at least 15 minutes every day. Okay? All right, let me turn to chapter 13. In the Untethered Soul. Chapter 13 is about why we feel limited and how to transcend the feeling of being limited to feel unlimited. That's what this chapter is about. And he says, ultimately, the word beyond captures the true meaning of spirituality. In its most basic sense, going beyond means going past where you are. It means not staying in your current state. When you constantly go beyond yourself, there are no more limitations. There are no more boundaries. Limitations and boundaries only exist at the places where you stop going beyond. So this chapter is all about going beyond what our boundaries are. To go beyond, you must keep going past the limits that you put on things. This requires changes at the core of your being. Right now, you are using your analytical mind to break the world up into individual thought objects. And actually, all you have to do is look around and you'll kind of notice that's true, because your mind can say, oh, that's a microphone, that's a water, that's a Ken, that's a cup, that's a Danielle, that's a, you know, blah, blah, blah. Right? Your mind is constantly breaking things up into thought objects. You are then using the mind to put these discrete thoughts together in defined relationship to each other. So for example, Danielle is a friend of mine. Actually, I know everybody in this room, but Dave's here for the first time. Let's pretend like I didn't meet him until tonight. I've actually known him for years, but pretend. So Danielle, that thought object is a friend of mine. Dave, he's a stranger, right? This is the way the mind does things, right? And of course, with what's happening, you know, in Virginia right now, you know, we have, you know, this person is a neo-Nazi and this person is a, I don't even know what everybody out there is called. That's how much.
Alt-right.
And then what are the other side? The alt-left?
Yeah.
They're alt-left, you know, so that's what the mind does, right? It divides. We have, you know, white and we have black and we have old and we have young and in shape and out of shape. And this one's good. In shape is good. Out of shape is bad. Oh, see, right? So this is what the mind does all of the time. And he says, your views, your opinions, your preferences, your concepts, your goals, and your beliefs are all ways of bringing the infinite universe down to the finite where you can feel a sense of control. Hmm. Think about that.
Yep.
Yeah. Good and bad is a sense of feeling control, right? Every bit of that. The mental model that you create through your views, your opinions, your preferences, your concepts, your goals, and your beliefs, that mental model is your apparent reality. The problem is, it's not reality. Therefore, you have to struggle day and night to try and make the world fit your model. And you label everything that doesn't fit as wrong, bad, or unfair.
Or unimportant.
Or unimportant. Yeah, wrong, bad, or unfair. So if we think about this for a moment with what's happening in Virginia right now, we have two sides, an alt-right and an alt-left. What does the alt-left think of the alt-right? Bad. What does the alt-right think of the alt-left?
Worse.
Bad again. I mean, maybe worse, but bad again, right? Both sides have an idea of how things should be. Do you agree with that? And both sides object to what is outside of their idea of how things should be. It is merely an extreme example of exactly what we all do all of the time, what this book is talking about. Right? It's what we all do all of the time. Okay, listen to this sentence. Are you ready for this? Take a deep breath. If you want to go beyond your mental model, you have to take the risk of not believing in it. You have to take the risk of not believing your own opinions of right and wrong, of justice and injustice, of fair and unfair, of how things should be and how things shouldn't be. And if you don't think that takes bravery, you are mistaken. That's why he calls it a risk. If you want to go beyond your mental model, you have to take the risk of not believing in it. Let's see. He then asks, you know, have you ever had a situation where there was something in your life or someone in your life that you had really believed in as an important part of your sense of comfort? You know, like it could be a job, it could be a spouse, it could be a child, it could be a parent, it could be a house. It was a very important part of what made you comfortable in this world. And then it was taken away from you. Like you were fired from the job, or the parent or child died, or, you know, you lost the house.
Demoted.
You were demoted. Mm. You were demoted once. Mm-hmm. He asks you to remember what that felt like, if you've ever had anything like that happen to you. He says, what happens then, if you can remember, most likely, unless you were already fairly mature on the spiritual path, you immediately began searching for a way to feel comfortable again, right? Even if the way of feeling comfortable again is hating the guy who demoted you, right? That's a new level of control. I can hate him now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
He was wrong.
He was wrong, right, exactly.
Go away.
Yeah. He says what's happening here is the universe is actually trying to help you awaken by taking your mental model apart. And what you immediately do is start rebuilding it in whatever way you can. And so what he's asking us to do, obviously, if things like this occur, and he's going to go beyond this, but if things like this occur, attempt to just be with the change, be with the unknown, be with the discomfort and do not try to rebuild your mental model. Do you want to say something, Rebecca?
That's exactly what Doreen was sharing with us tonight.
Yes.
The whole city is turned upside down. It will never be the same. It cannot be the same. It cannot go back together. It's been broken.
Yeah.
So now everybody has to view that city and themselves and the relationship in a different light.
Okay, so I don't know if you can hear Rebecca, but she's talking about how Doreen's town, Charlottesville, Virginia, is just been torn up. You know, all of the ideologies of what that town is and what it means to live there and all that have been completely torn up. And again, the thing that would be best to do for the one who wants to awaken would be to somehow let it be broken.
Yes.
In their own mind and not try to redefine what should we do about this, how can we fix this,
yeah.
Right? He says, oh, I love this sentence. First of all, he says, what you're really trying to do, you know, after this is pull a new mental model back around you so that you can settle down into a new familiar mental setting, right? He says, but if you really want to see, he says, we are constantly trying to hold our mental model together. If you really want to see why you do the things you do, then don't do them and see what happens. And then he uses an example. He says, let's say you're a smoker. If you decide to stop smoking, you quickly confront the urges that cause you to smoke. And he says, these urges are the reason you smoke. They are the outermost layer of cause. And if you can set through these urges, you will see what caused them. And if you can get comfortable with what you see, you will face the next layer of causation and so on. But then he says, everything, he used the example of smoking because we all recognize that as an addictive behavior. But then he says, everything is like that. For example, if you're the type of person or maybe type of lady that needs to fix your hair and put on your makeup before you go outside every day, he says, try going outside without doing that. Watch how uncomfortable it makes you. Start paying attention, right? He says, what you're going to see is how your everyday things, you know, what you wear, how you speak, you know, just everything about your, quote, personality is really built in order to hold your mental model together. And if you quit doing these types of things and the mental model starts falling away, the ego gets very, very scared.
Very upset.
And very upset. He says, in reality, you are constantly trying to stay within your comfort zone. You struggle to keep people, places, and things in a manner that supports your model. And if they start to go another way, you get very uncomfortable, and your mind then becomes very active, telling you how to get things back the way you need them to be. How many of us have experienced that, right? Yeah, we've all experienced this. He says, your mind is telling you to fix it. He says, so there are two ways that you can live. You can devote your life to staying in your comfort zone, or you can work on your freedom. These are your choices. He says, if you examine this, you'll see that you're willing to stay in your comfort zone, which is like a cage, actually, because you're afraid. Your comfort zone, your cage, is familiar to you, and the unknown is frightening. He says you can find the limits of your cage, because we're talking about what appears to be an invisible cage, right? None of us see bars around us. But he says you can find the limits of your cage whenever your psyche starts to resist something. Whenever your psyche is resisting something that is happening, you've found the bars of your cage, right? And you have two choices at this point. You retreat from the bars of your cage and get back in your comfort zone, or you move through, you move on through into the new unknown, the new discomfort, and you go beyond the bars of your own cage. He then gives a great example of a dog. in the backyard. He says, you know, of course, a lot of people have, you know, fences that you can see with your eyes, right? But he says, what a lot of people have now are those invisible fences. And that, you know, you put a collar on the dog, and when the dog is running all happily through the yard and then hits the edge of that, boom, they get zapped. And what happens after they get zapped a few times is they learn to stay away from the outer edges of the yard. He said, your psyche is the same way. That's how your psyche, it's like having an invisible fence. Your psyche is keeping you inside of your invisible cage because when you get close, you get zapped by discomfort, just like the dog. And just like the dog, you become trained to stay within the area where you're comfortable and not go near the invisible area where you know the discomfort is. And then he talks about this hero dog. I imagine it as a Rottweiler. He doesn't describe it, but I see it as a Rottweiler. The Rottweiler is determined to get out of the yard. So what the Rottweiler does one day is it goes close to the edge of that boundary just where the buzzing starts on the neck. And it actually sets there until it gets used to that level of buzzing. And then when it's used to that level of buzzing, it steps a little closer where there's more intense buzzing. And it just sets there until it recognizes that it's okay with this level of buzzing. And it keeps doing that until eventually it moves through the boundary. And then he points out, why was it able to move through the boundary? Because there never was really a boundary anyway. There was no fence, right? It was just discomfort keeping the dog inside. And that's what keeps us inside, right? Just discomfort. We're afraid to go beyond our discomfort. We will do anything to stay inside where we can feel comfortable. And that's why we are limited beings. And we each have our own set of limits. Now, he says, throughout each day, and this may seem true for some people and not for others, I don't know, but he says, throughout each day, you frequently hit the edges of your cage. So I guess the question is, do you experience discomfort every day? If you experience discomfort every day, then you might have a very, very small cage, right? So that any movement at all, you're hitting against it.
Or you could be starting to live larger.
Or you could be starting to live larger. Yeah. So what he is saying is you don't really have to do anything to break out of your cage because your cage will find you. I mean, so you don't have to go looking for your bars. Your bars will find you, I guess is that's what we want to say. So throughout each day, you frequently hit the edges of your cage. When you hit these edges, you either pull back or you try to force things to change so that you can remain comfortable. These are two ways you keep your cage in place, right? He says, when you approach the edges, you might feel insecurity, jealousy, fear, self-consciousness, whatever. He says, you either pull back again or you try to control things to make things be the way you want them to be. Spirituality begins when you decide not to do those things. You decide not to pull back from discomfort, and you decide not to try and control things so that you can feel comfortable. Instead, spirituality is the commitment to become free of the cage, like the dog, right? Just like what I imagine to be the Rottweiler. He says, if you're truly going beyond your cage, you are always at your limits. You're never back in the comfort zone. A spiritual being feels as though they are always going against the edge, and they are constantly being pushed through it. And one thing that comes to my mind, remember we watched a Michael Singer interview earlier this year, and remember how he talked about the guy hanging out on his lot outside? And remember how upset he was about that? And he had all of these thoughts about, you know, what's this guy doing on my property and blah, blah, blah. But what did he do? He went outside and invited him to come in to dinner, right? And also there's another story. I don't remember if he told that in the interview or if I read that in his book, The Surrender Experiment. But to me, this one's even more extreme. There were people that actually started building a house on his land. right? Without his permission. He just came home one day and somebody's building a house on his land. And, you know, you can imagine how the ego was screaming about that. You know, what right do these people have? Blah, 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 blah. Because it was the ego and for no other reason. Because, you know, in our world, he was right. They were wrong.
Yeah.
Right?
Definitely.
That didn't matter. Because it was the ego telling him to get rid of these people, guess what he let those people do? Build a house on his land. And as it turns out, 3 months later, they gave the house to him. Okay, that's just how it turns out. That has nothing to do with why he did it. He did it just because of wanting to be free. And if he's uncomfortable with this, this is, in his mind, an opportunity to become more free. You see? He says, eventually, you will realize that it cannot actually hurt you to go beyond your psychological limits. And if you think, again, it's just like the invisible fence, right? This is all just mental stuff. It's just mental. He says, if you're willing to just stand at the edge and keep walking, you will go beyond. You used to pull back when it got uncomfortable, or maybe you used to try and control things when it got uncomfortable. Now, you learn to relax and go past that point. That is all it takes to go beyond. Go beyond where you were a minute ago by handling. By that he means by being with, by allowing what is happening now. No longer pulling back or no longer trying to control. And then I love this part. He says, imagine a comfort zone that is so expanded that it can easily fit the entire day. I mean, what a simple thing, right? That just no matter what happens, you're okay. Isn't that really what we all want? Yeah. Imagine a comfort zone that is so expanded that it can easily fit the entire day, no matter what happens. The day unfolds and the mind doesn't say anything. You simply interact with the day with a peaceful, fully inspired heart. Right?
I have a comment.
Yes, ma'am. Do you want to come over here so they can hear you?
Well, my comment is, and I've heard this from other teachers, is then you sound like a really boring person. I mean, yeah. When you say it, you're just walking around and everything's okay. You're either a bliss ninny or you're just not engaged. I mean, that's what it sounds like.
Yes.
So if you would address that, I'd appreciate that.
Well, I can just say that's not my experience. I would say my experience is that it's just happiness.
I understand, but you see where you can read that and go like, why would I want to do that when it sounds like I'm just like...
I would say that's the mind trying to keep you from doing it.
I would agree.
You know, because what it is it's just happiness. And you know, stuff happens. I'll tell you guys a story.
Well, like today, we put our dog down.
Yeah.
Staying in the place.
Yeah.
You can share that if you want.
Yeah, I thought we weren't bringing that up. But go ahead and come here. You tell them, Rebecca. It happened to you. It didn't happen to me.
Well, it happened to us. So today we had to put one of our dogs down. So I'm listening to you say this, and my mind is arguing, of course, with what you're saying.
And tell me what your mind is saying. Let's listen to this mind for a minute.
Well, my mind is saying, how would I then show that I cared? I've had the dog 11 years. How unfeeling is this to just walk through this saying, everything's fine, putting your dog down is just fine, you know, because I'm listening
how about
to
this one?
The words.
How about
just
this?
The words.
Yeah, but how about this one? Being sad when you put your dog down is just fine.
Yes.
See,
yes.
That's where the ego tries to screw you
yes.
up. The ego tries to tell you that happiness is one emotion.
Yes.
Happiness is being fine with everything.
And I do know that.
Yes.
But listening to it, my mind
yeah.
is kicking in and going.
And can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Why did you put your dog down today? Because you hated your dog?
No.
Because you?
Loved my dog.
Cared. Do you
I
see?
Cared. Yeah.
You see? You see.
Yeah. It was the surrendering to what was.
Yes. So, you know, and every one of us at some point, unless our dogs drop dead, have to put our dogs
Almost.
Down, right? I mean,
yes.
that's right. This is going to happen.
Yes.
Right? And so we all go through this at some point.
Right.
This is a part of what happens in life. when you are doing the opposite of what he's talking about,
yes,
you're making that dog live 2 more weeks, 3 more weeks, 4 more weeks, because you can't face what you have to do.
And the vet tried to coerce us
yeah,
to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm just wanting to point out, because I know that this is a grappling point, just what you read,
yes,
for so many people. I'm not the only one in the room whose mind is going, but...
Yeah, yeah. No, there isn't anyone here that doesn't genuinely want this.
Yes.
We all want to be comfortable all of the time. The problem is the ego lies and says comfort comes through avoidance or control, when actually comfort comes through allowance and acceptance and love.
Yeah.
Right? So even the ego wants comfort. It's just that its comfort is the tiny little cage.
Yes.
And that can't ever be real comfort, because it has those edges that you're going to keep running into. Right? Imagine that as an electric fence, and you're going to keep hitting it, and you're going to keep hitting discomfort. The only way to really know comfort is to get outside of that fence, where it's wide open and there's no more electric fence.
Right.
Right? And that's the acceptance and the allowance of everything as it is, including your sadness. See, the ego wants to tell us it's not okay to be sad. It is okay to be sad. Now, where there's a problem
is if I stay stuck.
If you stay stuck there a year from now, you're still telling me how you had to put your dog down. You know, that's when you've stayed stuck.
No, I already saw a rescue and going like,
home. Okay. But that happens. But
yes.
That happens.
Yes.
Right? People stay there. It's okay for today. You know, maybe tomorrow, the next few days, I mean, I'm not going to put a limit on it.
No.
But there is a point when this should become a part of the past. Right?
Yes. I agree.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's even true when it's our parents, not, you know, our children.
Been there.
Right? I mean, that's just always true. You know, it's okay to be sad when things happen, but at some point it's also natural to move on and leave those things in the past where they were.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's see. So we do have a few minutes. I mean, I'm done with the chapter. We have 11 minutes left. Well, let me just read these last few sentences. He says, you end up, this is very true, I've experienced this myself, you end up loving your edges because they point your way to freedom. You know, when I first started this process, like everybody else, there was that resistance when you hit the edge of the cage. But after breaking through certain parts of the cage and experiencing the freedom of those parts of the cage disappearing, I became excited to continue that process. So then there comes a point where the discomfort shows up and you're at some point also happy, because this is another opportunity for healing. You start getting so excited about healing, and you understand that discomfort is the opportunity for healing, that, as he says, you begin to love your edges because they point the way to your freedom. And then he says, all you have to do is constantly relax and lean into them. We would call that allowance or acceptance, right? No controlling, no pulling back. He says, then one day, when you least expect it, you fall through into the infinite, right? You fall through into the infinite. So that's chapter 13. Do we have any questions or any comments or any sharings? We have about 5 minutes before I have to give the homework. All right, then what I will do is go ahead and give the homework, and then you know, maybe we'll just let Cheryl play a song or something. So here's the homework. Homework assignment A. Workbook lessons 208 to 214, so we're still in the review, which is, I hope you guys are enjoying it. I think it's a really nice review. Again, these 20 lessons are core lessons, so to get to go through them again is just incredible. Also, continue to practice daily awareness, watching awareness, or loving consciousness meditation for 15 to 20 minutes each day. And again, practice the loving all method. Homework assignment B, You're going to read The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, Chapter 9. And the link is provided in the homework. Also, if you have the black book or the green book, you could just read it from those books. That's fine. This is where we're going to read about the other type of meditation, the abandon release method. It's just another option. And then homework assignment C. Watch any Byron Katie video from the Always in the Now playlist, and the link to that playlist will be in your homework. This is in YouTube. There are dozens upon dozens, possibly even hundreds, of videos to choose from in this playlist. What you're asked to do is just scan the list and listen to any of the videos that attracts you personally, which means we're all going to be listening to different videos this time. What we want to do is listen to her practice inquiry, possibly on something that might sound unacceptable to us to forgive, or justified to be angry about, or justified to be, you know, something that seems a bit challenging. You know, like some of the people in the audience that we listened to in our last video, rape might have been a good one for them to listen to, right? Because there was this idea that rape is the one thing that this won't work on, right? So if that was my thought, then I'd want to find one about rape and listen to it.
She has one from a woman who was molested, and that's a wonderful
Okay, Rebecca question. Says there's one from a woman who was molested, and that's an excellent one. There's also even one in there about Donald Trump. Yeah, there's a Donald Trump one. So whatever it seems, I challenge you to pick one that is challenging for you, right? And listen to that. But any video you want to pick out. So again, workbook lessons 208 to 214. Of course, our daily meditation for 15 to 20 minutes each day. And of course, the Loving All method. The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, Chapter 9. And again, we're reading this, but you do not have to do the meditation. You can do the awareness, watching awareness, or loving consciousness. This is just a third option to learn about and see what you think. You might want to try it once to see if you like it. And then homework assignment C, any Byron Katie video that feels good for you, right? That feels like a challenge for you to help you look at the miracle of inquiry again. And that's it. That's all that I have. Ba-ba-ba-bum. I'm done.